taking people's power away, that's what it's about, isn't it? Because these are our rights that they want to give away, I think, as Richard quite rightly said. And usurping our constitution is not fair. It's not caring about the future of Australians, and it's actually unjust as well. Hello. We did have some trouble with these. So I want to talk about three things, really. I'm going to quickly talk about genetic manipulation and policy. I also want to refer to the environment chapter, which was published by WikiLeaks a few weeks ago. And I also want to propose something that I'm passionate about, and that is a principles approach to this as an alternative to the kind of shooting arrows at something that we don't really know what it is and try to fix it up and try to make it better and say we don't want things. I think we should start saying what we do want if there are going to be international negotiations, including the TPP. So on GM, we want precautionary laws, but the US, of course, wants to have its mode of so-called regulation, which is not regulation at all, imposed on the other countries, and this is a real problem for us. I think under investor-state dispute too, that GM-free zones, like the Tasmanian South Australia GM-free zones, which exclude the commercial growing of genetically manipulated crops and product labelling also, are going to be at risk of being rolled over by the provisions of this treaty. And also, we are always pushing for a scientific regulatory system, and yet the dominant mode, both here and overseas, is so-called science-based, which means not scientific at all. The template for what's to happen in the case of biotechnology and genetically manipulated organisms was put together by the Biotech Industry Organization, which is Washington-based. The US government did back the agenda. The Victorian and Queensland governments, interestingly, are members of the Biotech Industry Organisation, and there's bipartisan support in Australia for the promotion of biotechnology in agriculture and food and in other areas as well. Now, GM does not appear in the TPP negotiations, we're assured by the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade in mid-year last year when they briefed us. This may change under Abbott, but there's a reason to hope that it won't. And the reason, basically, is that they've already achieved their goals by stealth. In April of last year, six grain trading companies signed an agreement, which is voluntary, according to DFAT, in which they will make these non-binding agreements, but in line with the World Trade Organization's rules anyway. And so that agreement's already there, and I think as a result that we're not going to see anything specifically on this in the TPP. The government's joint statement, which was signed by the six governments in April of last year, really trots out feed the world. You know, we've got to have more production in agriculture, but there's no reference, of course, to the fact that we waste 30% of all the food that's produced. So we need to start rescuing food as well as wanting to produce more, because we're globally in a glut situation as far as food is concerned, aiming to drive down prices and to treat food as a commodity to be traded for profit. Not where it's most needed, but where it's most profitable. And that's why we have a billion people in the world starving right now, and on the other hand, a billion people now suffering from obesity, diabetes, and a number of other bad food-related illnesses. So those are some of the points from this agreement. They'll collaborate on a number of things to foster innovation, to allow trade of such products, so they want to remove any regulations. They ignore, for example, the International Biosafety Protocol, which has about 160 countries signed up to it, which creates a scientific regime for, as far as possible, ensuring that the international trade in genetically manipulated food products and crop seeds and so on is done safely. Australia's not a member, Canada's not a member, the USA is not a member, Argentina and Brazil are out of it as well. So it's those same grain traders that don't want any scientific surveillance of their activities. And specifically on plant biotechnology, they want the Codex, which is the international food standard, which is very dominated by the food industry, to dominate our attitudes and our regulatory systems. And they also want to promote synchronization and authorization. So they're going to start saying, oh, well, it's approved in the USA, so everybody else will approve it once it's authorized there. The US regulatory system is voluntary. It doesn't apply scientific criteria or rigor to the question whether or not particular genetically manipulated crops and foods are safe or not. And also, as you see there highlighted, facilitate the global management of GM contamination. So if something's approved somewhere, then if it happens to turn up somewhere else, well, they'll forgive that. And the reason's clear. In the case of Starling corn in 1998, it was first released in the USA, but approved only for animal feed. Mm-hmm. But within 12 months, activists surveyed food in the USA, found Starling in a huge range of food products. The company, Aventis, had to recall them at the cost of over $1 billion, and as a result, the company was bought up by others, particularly Monsanto. So they don't want a repeat of that, so they're going to forgive GM contamination of unapproved GM varieties, such, for instance, as rice from China, because it's being illegally and without authorization or any regulation, probably now extensively in the Chinese rice supply. There is bipartisan support from the old parties, the Liberal Nationals and Labor in Australia, for the promotion of genetic manipulation and gene technology generally. So we've already got this voluntary agreement. It's not going to be in the TPP, but the issues are just the same because it all originated in the origins of this negotiation. I wanted briefly to talk about the environment chapter, which was published by WikiLeaks about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I think now. It's absolutely unreadable. Angela's right about the text. I mean, when you look at it, it's just incomprehensible. But at least some people who are savvy about this have made some commentary. And we already have examples of what will happen if an investor-state dispute is evident, like the Canadian case with the coal seam gas. The other really outstanding case at the moment is Infinito Gold, which is a Canadian company suing the Costa Rican government for refusing to allow them to gold mine in its rainforests. So we're confronted now with the Abbott government doing a job on Tasmanian forests, doing a job on the Great Barrier Reef, and I can see that if there were investor state interests from overseas in those situations, we could see that the government might quite happily say, well, you know, if we don't act, if we don't do what we've said we'll do, then we're going to be sued. So, sorry, we're just going ahead with it. The number of issues there, you can see them, that have been raised by commentators on this. The Australian Department of Agriculture has made has made a statement, and you can read it there too. Australia is seeking to negotiate environmental commitments. Not very reassuring, particularly in the current political climate, and on climate change as well. Although they acknowledge climate change is a global concern, we've got Abbott's direct action as a response to that, which is a non-response. A couple of quotes from Jane Kelsey, who's a professor at Auckland, just on this particular text. We can't keep criticising this 29 chapters when we don't know what's in them, and only five of them are about trade anyway. We covered some of the other ones tonight, but there is virtually every aspect of our society and our lives would be affected by this agreement if it goes through. As she says, toxic biodiversity ecosystems, etc., and particularly indigenous knowledge and resources. For instance, she says that genetic resources, yes, corporations and states will agree, but the people who actually own them, the indigenous owners of our biological resources, our genetic resources, will be sidelined in the whole deal. All right, now I come to my little favourite thing that I want to push tonight. We're criticising all these things and we're working very hard in our own areas. And I've proposed a couple of times that we try to think about how could we positively influence rather than just critiquing this thing as if through a glass darkly, not really knowing what the score is or what's being done behind our backs. So I wonder if there's a possibility, and I'm just floating this as an idea again, that we take a proactive and positive stand that would provide the people with TPP concerns, and we're the majority, we're the 99%, even the people who don't know about this, as Richard said, when they do know about it, they don't like it, and quite rightly so. So I think we need positive and bigger picture demands. So at least initially, I wonder if there's a possibility of a group of people getting together to develop a statement which would be a set of threshold issues and particularly impact statements, which I'll come to in a minute, which would protect and promote citizens' rights, move from serving only business interests, because we know that at least 700 business lobbyists have got access to the full text and are influencing the wording, when the citizens of the world have no access and can't influence it at all. So we need to turn it to the public interest, and that we want publication of all the texts. The secrecy can't go on. Now, a couple of people have actually come out just in the last week or so with what I think is an excellent paper which could create a model for this. Olivia De Schutter, who's the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Food, and a researcher at Columbia University, Caitlin Quarters. So they call for an open process in which the 12 states would undertake a human rights impact statement as part of this process to see what the actual impact on human rights would be. And this seems an eminently reasonable, fair, just course to follow. And I would like to promote it as a point of view and something that anybody who's interested here or in the network, because there is the TPP Allies Network, which is global, which is talking the whole time, to try and get on and develop what do we want, not just what we don't want. Okay, so conform at least as a fundamental to the UN's Universal Declaration on Human Rights. Apply the precautionary principle, include the rights of the child, refugees, sovereign rights, and UN conventions. And again, I say, our governments have no mandate to give away our constitutional rights to corporations without our informed consent. Another person who has usefully reflected on this, which I think could be picked up as well, is this guy. I haven't read the full paper, but I think in his report to the UN, Promotion of a Democratic and Equitable International Order, he's on the right track and could be considered as part of this as well. And I've just included a couple of quotes there from him. Of course, he's got a particular point of view, and one of the things is that the Bretton Woods institutions, the IMF and World Bank, he proposes to come under the authority of the United Nations. These are economic institutions which are driving trade, which are allocating resources around the world, often very unfairly, are requiring governments to adopt policies and put laws in place which are just not in the interests of their citizens. They need to be stopped, they need to be brought under some kind of control, and he proposes that they be subject to the UN Charter. So my conclusions, bioindustry organisation gets its way even though the TPP is not going to reflect directly on genetically manipulated crops and foods because of the voluntary agreement. But we need to beware that Andrew Robb and Tony Abbott are wild cards, are loose cannons, and you can't rely on them to not do what you don't expect. So we don't know. Opening up ISDS was a clear departure from what the Labor government had been telling us all along they wouldn't deal on. The environment chapter trashes the environment. And lastly, my thing, public first. We're the 99%. We're the ones who count. We want to say what we want against the 1%, who are the people who want to own everything and control everything and rape and pillage this earth. And it's just now time that we gather our resources and our resolve to actually do something about this. And I think we can by being positive and clear and proactive and not just continuing to dwell on what we don't want, but say loud and clear what we do want. Thank you.
At this point, I'd just like to thank Michael and all the volunteers who've helped Michael put this together too. So. And the Manufacturing Workers Union, and the speakers. And of course, finally, all of you for coming and listening and sitting so patiently. Thank you.